Now, back to the Profit Express on 88.7 FM, WRHU. Once again, here is your host, Tim Healy.
Well, hello, welcome back to the Profit Express. I am Tim Healy, and if you're just tuning in, this is a first of its kind, may never happen ever again. I'm the guest. Yes, that's right. The tables have been turned. I'm not in the power seat. I'm in the hot seat. I'm in the guest seat. And it was the brainchild of our ongoing contributor, financial guru, and expert himself, Phil Capel, Piermont Wealth Management. He says, Tim, I would love to interview you on air. I said, what? I don't know.
How you doing, Tim? Tim. I think you're doing great so far.
I'm okay.
I was think you did better than okay, dude. Not okay.
I interview celebrities. I'm not nervous. I'm getting interviewed. I'm a little nervous.
I think you're doing fantastic.
Thank
and
you,
I knew
Phil.
You would. I had full confidence in you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you're being gentle. I know the tougher questions are coming up, you know.
Yeah, I saved them for the,
you
for
gave
the
me
back
some
end of the
balls,
hour.
You know.
Yeah, these are more like layups, alley-oops.
Yeah. So if you're just tuning in, I'm the guest. So I'm going to I'm handing it over to the host, Phil Capel.
Okay, so let's move on to tell us your biggest challenge as a sales consultant. As far as working, now you have a prospect in front of you or even a client in front of you. Is it getting them to commit to the process? Is it getting paid? Is it, you know, any other thing that you may typically go through with a client that just frustrates you and is a hurdle that you need to get over?
That I need to get over?
To work with the client.
The toughest thing, whether it's in making a sale, like when I bring a new client on, right? Or when I'm working with a client, it's one word. It's not about getting paid. I've never had a problem with that. I think twice in 20 years has been, you know, a problem with getting paid. The biggest problem, whether I'm selling it or I'm training a client, is change.
Okay.
Because the end
just explain that.
Right. The end of the day, I sell change.
Sure.
Because either somebody, maybe they work with a competitor of mine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they did it a certain way. Or maybe they've never worked with a competitor. They've never had a trainer or a coach before. And what I'm, by the very nature of what I do, I'm giving them a new way of doing things. So
okay.
There has to be change. They're going to have to change. Okay, not everything, but there will be enough change involved and changes a few things. It's uncomfortable. It's risky. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Think, well, you know, because no guarantees it works.
Right.
It's disruptive. I haven't done it this way. I don't know. It can be expensive. So that's really what I'm selling.
Do you find that a client has an attitude where, hey, I hired you. I brought you on board. I'm going to pay you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's no guarantee that at the end of the day, my revenues are going to increase.
Mm-hmm.
So does that affect their commitment to the process, their commitment to change?
Well, that's a great question. But I think because I know that, you know, if somebody works the system, I'm very confident that their chances of success are pretty high. But because that is an important issue, I bring it up in the beginning.
Okay.
It's like calling the pink elephant in the room.
Sure.
I say, listen, I'll tell you right now. And then that creates a high level of confidence. I said, I'm going to give you a system. You and I will have X number of sessions together, X number of hours. You have this kind of access to me, guaranteed. And I'm probably going to give you more. That's who I am.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't work it, I can't do anything.
Right.
And I said, if you're not comfortable with that, we probably shouldn't get together. And I tell them that.
Okay.
So they kind of,
that's
you know,
fair.
Yeah, it's, you know, right, before
it's
they
right
sign
there
on the line that it's done, before they write the check.
Sure. Sure.
You know?
So tell me, in the sales consulting, sales training world,
mm-hmm.
have there been changes due to technology or any other factor in, let's say, the last 5 years that you've seen? I mean, can you be Amazoned? Is there a scenario where there's no more Super Tim Healy's of the world out there, you know, creating selling machines as far as...
Stop, you're killing me. I don't like Amazon, by the way. I know we've had this conversation.
Sure,
you're a big fan. They come to your front
I'm a big
door.
User.
Yeah.
I'm a big supporter.
I just don't think that, yes, have there, in the past 5 years, there's been a ton of technology changes, you know, whether it be through automation, through CRM, through social media, which is all directly and indirectly impacted salespeople in a whole host of ways. Will the salesperson ever go away? I have to say no, as long as there's human beings. Because at the end, now, and the sales process has been augmented because of technology. And because, that's actually an interesting point, you know, 20 years ago, certainly well before the internet was really, I mean, I know the internet was around 20 years ago, but not to the point it is today.
Right.
20, 25, 30 years ago, now people can access so much. Before people buy a car, they know as much as a salesperson does. And that's not just a car. I'm talking anything, an industrial product, service. You can, if you want to, you can do your research and know a lot. So then it's often said now, I've read studies, I know HubSpot did a study not too long ago, saying the prospect is coming to the salesperson about, there's different numbers, 40% of the way into the sales process.
As far as the knowledge that that person has received on the internet?
Because of that, the influence, what how marketing is impacting the knowledge that they get,
okay?
And then they're already starting to make decisions because they have so much information. So by the time they talk to the first sales, the salesperson for the first time, they have a lot of information, and they may have already narrowed it down or may have already made a decision. Again, it's different in different industries,
okay?
Will the Super Tim Healy's of the world ever go away? No. Because we're, as long as there's still human beings out there.
Yes. Thank God.
Take it easy, listeners, please. You're okay.
I was so worried coming into this interview. How you'd answer that question.
But it's because sales are still made emotionally. You're connecting to a human being. Unless something really radical happens that I'm not smart enough to figure out right now.
How do you feel about the line, he's a natural-born salesman or a salesperson? Is this somebody who's born a salesman? And it's like, you know, it's a phrase, but can you be taught? I mean, obviously because you're in that field.
You can be taught, sure.
Right, but is somebody a natural-born salesman? Oh, he's a born salesman.
But, you know, it's interesting. We've all heard that phrase. The reason I have a problem with that phrase is they equate it, and they usually say that phrase to somebody who's talkative and outgoing.
Correct. And I was going to say, how does that make you feel? Does that bother you, that phrase? Because it is associated with somebody who talks a lot.
Right. And quite frankly, the funny thing, there was in the book To Sell Is Human by Daniel Pink, which is a phenomenal book. I definitely recommend reading for anybody out there who's in sales and business. The studies that they've done, somebody who's a straight-up introvert doesn't do well in sales, and somebody who's a straight-up extrovert doesn't do well in sales. And the extrovert, the talkative person, outgoing person, typically, as we were just discussing,
is the natural-born salesman.
That's what they say, but they're talking themselves out of sales and not listening. They're blabbering too much. It's a person who's kind of a mixture of the introvert-extrovert who tends to do best. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but the whole natural-born salesperson,
yeah, it doesn't make you cringe when you hear somebody. No. If you're at a cocktail party and someone says it about someone else and you overhear it, it's not like, listen, who knows, that person may not be able to sell anything.
Right. I just smile when I hear that. It's like when he said, you know, if you can sell one thing, you can sell anything. That's not true.
Sure.
Not true.
So who's your sales idol? Who's somebody you look up to? Is it like, you know, Tony Robbins, like guru in that area, or somebody who's just excellent at sales that we wouldn't even know who that person is, or somebody that is a client of yours?
This guy, Phil Capel. He inspires me every
keep
day.
Keep going.
What he does for his clients is awe-inspiring. All right, can I give more than one?
Sure.
Okay. Having the show, I've been fortunate to interview a few of them, okay? Sales idols, Joe Girard. Not everybody's going to know the name. He's well into his 80s. I had him on the show a couple of years ago. Guinness Book of World Records, greatest salesman, sold 13,001 cars in 15 years from Rolls Chevrolet in Michigan.
Okay.
Actually, there's a person not long ago who might have broken his record. They're verifying the sales now.
Right
being
now?
Dead serious. No, I'm serious. Like a month ago, I read the article. They had to verify the sales, you know, because Joe Girard was in the Guinness Book of World Records. Sold for one dealership for 15 years. The guy was amazing. And he did it out of complete desperation. He had a contracting business that was going broke. His wife said, hey, you know, what are we going to feed the kids? He went to a friend. They asked for a job selling cars. His friend turned him down. He went to Marola Chevrolet. They said, yeah, we'll give you a shot. Long story short, you know, he was making 300 grand a year in the 70s as a car salesman, and he had two assistants. The guy was a machine.
Wow.
Then he went on to write books and, you know, tour the world doing speeches.
Sure.
He's an idol. He's a ham and egg.
He's one.
He's one. I kind of like the more old fashioned kind of guy. Another one who I wrote about not too long ago for a seminar. You're gonna know this guy, Ron Popeil. Set it and forget it. The sure. Vegematic, Chop-O-Matic guy.
He's two.
I like those guys. I don't know if he's definitely on the Joe Girard for me. But he really kind of exploded the whole infomercial scene and selling just hawking products.
Okay.
Yeah, and I had Joe Girard on the show. I did not have Ron Popeil on the show. Anthony Sullivan I had on the show. You know him, OxyClean, yeah. Right? Had him on the show. He's just a great guy selling product, and he's got that British accent. I'll never forget one of his quotes. He's like, Tim, you have to be direct with these people. You're selling to drunk people at 2 a.m. You got to beat them on the head with a hammer, you know?
Uh-huh.
That's, you know, it's not sophisticated. It's not modern, but it's just guys who can go out and sell and sell and sell for decades and decades, and they're relentless. So it's
Joe
Girard, Ron Popeil, because he kind of exploded the whole infomercial thing. Anthony Sullivan's great because I had him on the show too. Now, here's another surprise one. Here's a bonus. Can I give one more bonus?
One more.
Joe Addis.
Okay.
Probably haven't heard of him. Go home today. Go on YouTube. It's Joe, his last name. What is it? Ades. He's since passed away. He sold vegetable peelers in Union Square in Manhattan 6 days a week. The guy made a fortune doing it. $5 vegetable peelers. There's an amazing video. There's a number of videos on this guy.
Okay.
He would sit in a suit in Union Square selling vegetable peelers. See, to me, I really admire that because you are going face-to-face, belly-to-belly with the public.
Mm-hmm.
And they're walking by, and they don't want to be bothered. And, I mean, think about how tough that is.
Oh, it's got to be brutal.
I really admire that.
And Joe Addis, Ades.
Ades, Joe Addis. He passed away, I think, I don't know, 2009, something like that. Those are the kinds of guys that are idols to me.
Okay.
That's me.
So tell us, okay, switching gears a little
bit.
You know, sell is a four-letter word. And I think sometimes sales rep or anything that starts with the word sell or sale,
yeah,
has a negative connotation.
It does.
Do you have to get over that hump with clients as far as, okay, we got to rewire you that sell is a good word, that you're helping people, that you're solving an issue? Is that one of the changes, that mindset that you have to get a client over?
You do, unfortunately, because sales does have, you know, sales is a four-letter word. It's something I'm proud of. I'm proud to be a part of it. And there's lots of unfortunate reasons why it has a black eye, if you will. But I was just on a conference call, a scheduled conference call this morning, and I was telling the guys, I'm like, listen, you know, yes, you have to sell something. But if you look at it, the sale, the actual transaction, is the smallest part of the whole process, if you really think about it, especially in the B2B world. You just mentioned it, you were right. Somebody comes to you, listen, if they want a luxury item and something they don't have to have, but they just want it because they're going to enjoy it and put a little smile on their face, or it's a bucket list thing, you know, you've put them in contact with that. You've just made them happy for whatever reason, and that's just a thing to feel good about. Or if you have a solution that's solving a problem, like in what you do in financial advisory, what I do, you help somebody understand what's going on, what's working, what's not working. They have a problem. If you do the right job of connecting with them and communicating and finding out then you can position your solution and you're helping them. Mm-hmm. You're not making it up. You're not twisting sign real hard, third copy, blah, 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 baloney.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're here to help. And if I can help you, then yeah, you'll have to invest, you'll have to buy my product or service. It's about helping. That's the mindset.
What funny experiences have you had? Have you just like working with like either a prospect comes through the door? I mean, there's got to be stories that like, oh my God. Like
a training story, a prospecting story, you tell me.
Well, how about that? Let's go. Has there been somebody that's come through the door where right off the bat, you know, you can tell, wow, this is going to be tough. I mean, turning this person into a selling machine or into a successful salesperson that's going to be able to keep their job and stay with the company is just an uphill battle, to say the least. Can you size that person up and say, I mean, there's no way this person should be in sales?
You see that a lot. You know how I know somebody should never be in sales? I have one client I do this monthly training because they have their industrial. They have sales guys all around the country. So once a month they bring in these teams, and it's, you know, a typical sales team might be about 8 or 10 guys. Okay, this is every month, and I've been doing it for years with this one client. And right off the bat, the person who comes in, and they come from all different walks of life, all different experiences, right?
Sure.
The one who starts talking and mouthing off, well, Tim, let me tell you, I've been to lots of training, sales programs, and
Mr. Know-It-All.
Yeah. At that moment, I go and I have a fork in my briefcase.
Okay.
Stick it in your done fork, right? And I have never been wrong with those guys.
They got to go.
Never. The ones who will surprise you are the ones who are quiet and just listen. And then what's funny, because the owners will look, and they want the guy with the energy, and they want the guy with the... And those guys bomb more times than not. It's the kind of the person who blends into the woodwork, you know, they're focusing. They're trying to understand and learn. And more often than not, they succeed. So, again, you talked about it earlier. You know, what are those top three things that make a great salesperson? It's not your degree. It's not your knowledge. Do you really want it?
Okay.
How bad do you want it?
Is there a male versus female, as far as being conducive to change, as far as not being that talkative, outspoken person in the room? Do you see a difference working with a female client as opposed to a male client and how they receive your services as a sales coach?
Women can be just as successful as men in selling. I don't care about industries. Even industrial doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
Women are more open to being coached than men. Women do a better job of putting their ego aside.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. If I had it just in general, for sure.
They're more coachable.
Absolutely. You know, they're just like, you know, hey, I don't know everything, and maybe you can help me. Where the guy's like, whoa, you know, they try to resist.
How important is it for a sales...
And this is the Profit Express on 88.7 FM. I forgot to put in the... I'm just a guest. I don't want to overstep. So, and if you're just tuning in, it's Phil Capel, Piermont Wealth Management. I got so wrapped up in this interview. This is fantastic. If I'd known, I would have bought coffee. The tables are turned today. Phil had the idea. Tim, I want to interview you on the show. I said, okay. A little nervous.
You're fantastic.
This could be a 2-hour show for sure.
Easy.
And so the tables are turned. He's normally our, you know, financial expert, of course, Piermont Wealth Management, Phil Capel. And he's doing, I'm starting to sweat my job as a host. That's how good he's doing. So if you're just tuning in, this is like, why is it sounds like Tim's being interviewed. You are right. First ever on the Profit Express.
Tim, first of all, you're doing great.
Thank you, sir.
And I'm enjoying playing the role of the host. when we worked together,
yes.
One of the things that was, I thought, real important was setting some sort of goal. Whether it's a numerical goal as far as number of new clients in or a dollar goal, how much new money is going to come in or additional revenue or additional profits. How important is it for you to sit down and make sure that your clients have an identifiable, like a specific goal, rather than just saying, I want to increase sales, you know, and just some, like, you know, pie in the sky, like, you know, without a specific number.
Right. Well, it's like going hunting and I want to shoot something. Anything. If it moves, is what you taught me. It sounds cliche and silly, but it's serious because, you know, you start with the goal. And it's funny, when I work with clients, I've actually talked clients down from goals because they're not realistic. You know, I believe in the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's got to be reasonable.
Yeah. Is it 10%, 15%? But some guys, well, you know, I made $300,000 last year. I want to make $500,000 this year. I'm like, okay, how are you going to get there? You know, not that you can't, not that it's not possible, because if your goal isn't identifiable, as you said, and it's not within reach, then what's going to happen is, and then you back out. You know how it goes. You back out. Okay, how many appointments do I have to have? How many calls? You know, what kind of marketing will I be doing? And then you back out all your activity to get there. You run the numbers. And if it's so out of whack, you know, first quarter in, you're going to be so deflated, so miserable. You're done.
How do you set expectations with a sales manager at where you're then working with the sales team? In other words, the sales manager wants a specific number. You go and you're working now with the sales team and you just realize, you know, it's not going to happen. I mean, you got to adjust downward for this group of people on the sales team.
Hopefully I would have, you know, in the discovery process before they, if they're a new client, you know, you want to find out what you're up against. So sometimes you don't always find out, you know, because I don't interview the whole sales team necessarily before I'm hired.
Sure.
So you don't know until you're in it. But if that's the case, you know, you got to be realistic. You know, the sooner you tell them, the better. And it's like, okay, you know, let's step it back. And, I'll, you know, why did you want that goal to begin with? I want the manager to justify to me why they wanted that goal.
Okay.
You know, because then if I can shoot holes in that, okay, let's get something more realistic where you're, you know, we're going to be ahead, you know, but, you know, because you don't want to completely kill your whole sales force, you know, by, you know, April 1st. So it's really a matter of having them explain to me why they think this goal is reasonable.
So let's go back to the funniest story. Any funny stories where, like, oh my God, you worked with someone who's a complete character, but serious about the process, or you're working with a client and they have a potential client who's a complete character, you know, but you're helping that person close the deal.
Okay. So there's two stories. So the first one, or I can't use names. The salesperson's name is Phil, I'll say.
Okay.
It is. It's not Phil. It actually is Phil. It's not Phil Capel. And in training, okay, I always say, listen, you want to set up an appointment that's qualified. You want to waste your time, okay, because time is everything. So, you know, if you want to sit down and talk to somebody, you know, as part of how I help people qualify them on the phone to see if it's a good match, if it makes sense to meet. And one of the lines that I use in training is, I say, listen, guys, again, this isn't a training class. This isn't to prospects. I say, listen, dry cleaning's expensive. I don't want to put on a suit and tie and cross, you know, go across town if you're not qualified. I don't want you to waste my time. And this is just me talking to the sales
team,
right? Mm-hmm. Part of what I also do is I record sales conversations for training purposes.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So for this one client, I got a batch of calls that were recorded through their phone systems, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it was late at night, and I was listening to them. They downloaded my laptop, and I'm just trying to get some work done. So I what I do is I take a recorded call, and I transcribe it just to show them, you know, cues and clues. And
how many times they say,
all those things, like, interrupting, not listening, right? And it's a great tool, great tool. So I'm sitting there in my living room with my wife. She's on the couch. She's reading a magazine or whatever. And I have my headset in because obviously, you know, my wife doesn't want to hear these conversations.
Sure.
I'm sitting there. And Phil.
Not me.
No, not Phil Capel, promise. Was calling this prospect to get an appointment. And the prospect was resisting and Phil was going back and forth, doing a pretty good job. He was digging in, you know, not being too aggressive, but just going for it. And then the prospect says, all right, yeah, you know, all right, let's meet. And then Phil says, He's like, okay, listen, I'll meet, but listen, dry cleaning is expensive. I don't want you to flake out on me. I don't want to go across town if you're not serious. And I'm sitting there, and I am listening to this. And Phil, I start to laugh so hard, I'm crying. I'm tearing. Right. I hit rewind. I'm listening to this. And Carrie's like, what's going on? I couldn't even tell her I'm laughing so hard. So he literally took what I said. Now, shame on me. I assume that these guys knew this is just sales kind of, you know, yeah, right?
Your tongue trainer. In cheek, right.
Right. He's like, listen, I don't want you to flake out on me.
What was the response?
The response is what? From the prospect? Yeah.
From the
He's
prospect.
He's like, oh, no, I won't be here. Okay. Yeah, he took it.
He took it.
He took it. Because, you know, because Phil delivered it. Like, he's like, come on, I don't want you to flake out on
me. I want to know that you're serious.
Like I always say with messages, if you believe the message, you can say almost anything.
Sure.
Because almost anything.